Welcome to Seasteading Today, a talk with seasteaders and their supporters. Seasteading is a movement devoted to developing floating communities in the ocean based on the principles of contract and radical consent. I'm Susanna Docupil, a member of the board of the Seasteading Institute. With me is Joe Quirk, a sea evangelist. Joe has co-authored with Patry Friedman the forthcoming book, Seasteading: How Ocean Cities Will Change the World. The book describes how civilizations, floating communities on international waters, could be the future of voluntary associations. The book will be released in the summer of 2016.
As Americans watch the efforts of various candidates for president, one major theme has emerged: that politics as usual is simply not as attractive to the American people as it used to be. The popularity of Donald Trump and Ben Carson among Republicans and Bernie Sanders among Democrats suggests that people are looking for fresh ideas about governance that come from outside the political establishment. So tonight, we're going to explore an option for those who aren't satisfied with their political choices. People often joke about moving to other countries if their least favorite candidate wins the presidency. But what if moving to a city with policies custom-tailored to exactly your values were a real option? Some people who believe in the power of voice and exit have a plan that can make this well-worn joke a reality. The plan is called Seasteading, a project to create floating cities that reflect the values and principles of those who consent to participate in them. Tonight, we're speaking with Joe Quirk, a sea evangelist, who has a forthcoming book entitled Why Seastead. Joe, would you explain briefly what is seasteading and how it relates to the idea of consent of the governed?
What if you could really get outside of the political process and found your own country? I learned after being on a cruise ship and studying oil platforms that the technology for floating cities in international waters is at hand. And we could create potentially thousands of startup societies on the ocean. And seasteaders bring a Silicon Valley sensibility to the problem of governance, which is basically that 193 national governments don't represent the range of solutions and values that 7 billion people have produced. And we'd like to sort of unleash all the innovation that people are capable of producing in international waters with startup governance.
So Joe, this is a pretty radical idea. It's almost as radical as leaving one's country of origin to move to America, simply for more economic opportunity and a better system of government. If you were going to move to a seastead tomorrow in search of a better way of life, what would you tell your family and friends that you were looking for?
I'd say I want to be a pioneer to push forward the next wave of superior governance. And when people object to my ambitions to do this, they usually sound like European monarchists who say, why would you want to go to this, you know, giant life raft over in the Americas to start your own society? What good could possibly come from this? I mean, these people have crazy ideas. They think women should be allowed to vote. They think people can govern themselves instead of the royalty governing them. They think they can have religious freedom separate from the state. All these crazy ideas were demonstrated to be true. They infected the rest of the world and changed the whole world. And solutions don't come, I believe, from arguing within political systems. They come from experimenting with new political systems where new modern solutions are discovered.
But we already have 50 different states, and each one has their own state government. Our current system already allows for a lot of regional variation in terms of how we organize civic society. Just look at the difference between your state of California and my home state of Texas. So what does a seastead offer a person that's better than simply moving to a different state?
We can choose among states, and many Californians are fleeing to Texas. Every time I go to Texas, I meet people that used to live in California. They're usually businessmen who can do a better, serve their customers better if they leave California. California is able to take advantage of the fact that it's beautiful and warm and enjoyable to live in. So the state of California governance has become pretty dysfunctional. So choosing among governance, among states, makes states a little better than federal governments. Choosing among municipalities and towns makes towns a little better governed than states. It's very difficult to really choose fresh ideas among governments. I mean, the United States governments the parameters were set up when information traveled at the speed of a horse. I mean, can you imagine if other technologies that we use to get along, if we were still using like the Franklin stove, for instance, or his flexible urinary catheter, or all the things he invented then? What causes things to move forward is people's freedom to experiment and peacefully try to serve others. And we think we could provide voluntary governance on the oceans, create a market of governance on the seas, and allow people to choose among them, and then we'd have a diversity of societies with unique values.
So I hear you saying that seasteads could potentially create the next constitutional innovation that could be adopted throughout the world, just like the American Constitution 200 years ago.
Yes, if indeed writing a constitution is the best way to design a society. And it's ridiculous that we should be operating according to rules written 200 years ago. If so many people have invented new ways that governance could work, they're called, you know, there's futurarchy, there's fluid democracy, there's smart contracts, there's CODIUS, and for the most part, these things can't be tried out anywhere. We'd like to give people the platforms to try out their ideas for governance, demonstrate better governance practices on the ocean, which will then hopefully affect governance in the large, old, gridlocked governments that we're stuck with today.
Well, right now, in the United States of America, we have a mechanism for changing the way we have our government, and they're called elections. Why don't we just elect new people who champion these innovative ideas that you're talking about, instead of leaving the country entirely?
Well, you can't change your government by voting. You certainly can't make your values realized by pressing a lever. And when one system offers you two choices, you know you're being conned, because we don't really radically change the growth of what we don't like about government by voting. I mean, under Democrats, wars increase. Under Republicans, spending increases. It's all going in the same direction. Bill Gates didn't change IBM from the inside. He made Microsoft. Apple didn't try to change Microsoft. Linux didn't try to change other things. If people can break away and try their own ideas, and then other people are free to choose among them, that's the source of progress. And we have that in almost everything that's progressing, but we just don't have it in governance.
So you didn't know you wanted an iPhone before somebody showed you an iPhone, and you're saying that the same could be true with governance, that something that we haven't even come up with yet could be developed on a seastead, and everyone would want it after they saw it. But it could never come to be within the context of an existing government because there are too many restrictions and it's too cumbersome to change the process.
Exactly. The best solutions for how to govern ourselves are not part of what we argue about now. They'll emerge from a system of fluidity, movement, choice, and diversity.
So if one of the benefits of seasteading is that it creates competition for governance ideas. In traditional markets, when a market leader is challenged with new entrants into the market, they tend to push back in some way. Would you expect that existing governments would push back against seasteading if it became fairly popular?
The whole point of getting control of a government is to prevent other people from doing what you don't want them to do. Some of the people most incentivized to get control of governments are people that want to lock down their monopoly on a particular industry. And what makes seasteads unique is that the mechanism itself prevents monopolies from forming, I believe. So you can imagine if societies are being built on a fluid frontier, and if they're modular and disassemblable, you could attach to seasteads you want to be a part of, remove your consent from seasteads you don't like, move out and form your own government. I'd like to see a proliferation of different kinds of society experiments competing to attract citizens, much like has happened on the American frontier where we got all our innovations in governance. And if people can move among them, found as many as they like, and then others choose them, we'll be less likely to have these coercive monopolies of states that we have now on land. So we think of oceans as a fundamentally different medium in which societies can compete. In fact, I don't think they could probably be characterized as nation states. I think they'd be voluntary societies.
So which would you say is a greater threat? The technological obstacle of building a city in the sea, the open water can be fairly dangerous, or a land-based government?
We have some significant challenges ahead of us with regard to engineering challenges for permanent cities on the high seas, but they're doable. We have cruise ships, we have oil platforms, and if we can build space stations in the sky, we can build sea stations on the ocean. The real threat to seasteading, in my opinion, is the growth of empires and their increasing interest in claiming jurisdiction over the 45% of the Earth's surface that is not claimed by any state. And I would encourage people to keep their politicians within their governments and don't petition them to claim jurisdiction over the seas. Allow us to colonize the seas and see if we can demonstrate that our voluntary societies work better than your nation states. You have nothing to lose. If they fail, you can laugh at the fiascos. And if they succeed, perhaps we'll learn something new about innovation in how we get along with each other.
Is seasteading technology really close to becoming a reality? I mean, how far are we away from actually developing livable ocean-based cities?
You have to think about the confluence of a lot of things. So in shallow territorial waters, we already have the technology for floating apartment houses. The Saigon Floating Hotel was made back in the 80s, and it's, you know, sailed to several different countries or been towed to several different countries. And we're working, the Seasteading Institute is working on the Floating City Project to negotiate a deal with a host nation to have floating platforms in their territorial waters gain some political independence and have a floating city in shallow waters. But of course, so that technology already exists. But the real goal, of course, is to go to the high seas where waves are high. And floating hotels already exist servicing oil platforms. The problem is they're very expensive. And you need a highly profitable business model like drilling for oil to pay for it. So many of the people involved in seasteading are working on ways to lower the costs of these floating structures on the sea. And my colleague, Chris Mulia, who's our managing director, is working on 3D printing business models to make seasteads get increasingly inexpensive as they scale up. Other people are working on geopolymer concrete. There's a great trend in less expensive materials that we think the cost of seasteads could go down to the point where we could come up with a business model that would pay back the costs of the engineering might that would be required to create stable businesses on the ocean. If cruise ships can do it, permanent floating platforms can.
So if you have these voluntary societies based on permanent floating platforms, how do you avoid just becoming a might-makes-right system of government, with the guy with the biggest ship and the biggest guns taking over everyone else?
So we have that system right now. There are the biggest guns and the biggest ships that will be able to quash any seastead that could possibly appear on the sea. And I think seasteads won't be any threat to civilization, certainly not initially. Because if you want to go out and found your seastead with an algae farm business model, you're going to need customers. You're going to have to get people to volunteer to move to your society. It's going to be very difficult to confiscate from people and build up a vast military. A precedent for this I think of as the Cayman Islands, which has no standing army, takes a very spiteful stance towards the U.S. with regard to welcoming financial mavericks and healthcare renegades. And if you think of nation states as, you know, sharks, I think of seasteads want to think like cleaner fish. They want to provide a service that the sharks appreciate. And the marvelous thing about a fluid frontier, where you can only get citizens if you attract them to volunteer to attach to you, it's going to be very difficult for you to simply seize control, point guns at them, and then force them to do bad things. On a fluid frontier, hopefully people will be able to detach from one another and sail about and choose the kind of nations they want to attach to.
So what types of societies do you see emerging on seasteads, and will there be any type of law enforcement necessary?
I think it's unimaginable to us now, and it's equivalent to European monarchs asking, well, what will Manhattan Island look like? What laws will there be? I think societies are so complex, and they evolve in such unpredictable ways given their initial parameters. The trick is to have as many small startups as possible, where the ones that work the best are the ones that people choose. And so the costs of disaster are low compared to, say, all of China becoming communist, and if it doesn't work out, you know, tens of millions of people have to die. On a seastead, you just simply go bankrupt and go out of business. And then there are other unimaginable societies being created that set better examples, and people choose those. If we have a market of governance, like we have a market of other technologies, I think we'll really create improvement.
Joe, you're obviously very passionate about this subject matter. Tell us a bit about how you became a sea evangelist and what inspired you to devote your life to be a fisher of men, as they say in the New Testament.
I like it. I like the reference. I started out as a novelist, then I became a science writer, and I wrote about evolution, and I saw that the secret recipe for progress is variation and selection. Wherever there's decentralized variation in forms, whether it's in biology or markets or technology, and then you have selection by lots of different people, you get this progress. And I had one summer where I was on a cruise ship, and it was the size of a skyscraper. It was the highest standard of living I ever had. And it was a very comfortable experience. I describe it as going camping and taking your mall with you. And within a few weeks, I was at Burning Man. And I'd already been at Burning Man 10 times. And I saw that societies evolve in ways that are unpredictable, given their initial rules. For instance, Burning Man started as a trade economy, and it evolved into a gift economy. I've spent a lot of time with developmental economics. I would have never believed that you could have a gift economy among 60,000 people. I have been proved wrong. Once again, an experiment proves the expert wrong. So I was open to this idea that, boy, if you could have lots of these, you'd have lots of interesting societies evolving in interesting ways and developing different cultures, and people could choose among all these. And I happened to meet Patry Friedman at Burning Man, who described for me what seasteading was. I didn't know what that word meant. And because I'd just been on a cruise ship, I said, yeah, I could see that, yeah, floating cities in international waters. I could see that that'd be interesting. But I didn't understand why anyone would work to bring it about. But then I noticed that the Burning Man logo, that the seasteading logo was based on the Burning Man logo. And I said, why are floating cities on the ocean? How did the model of Burning Man become the model of floating cities? So I went and read Patry's blog. And that was where he showed that if governance could vary on the oceans and people could select among them, you would have variation and selection in governance itself. So we'd unleash the kind of progress that we see in technology, in the technology of governance. And I think of governance as a technology, which has not evolved since the days of Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin's technologies have evolved marvelously. His innovations in governance have not, because other people are not allowed to experiment and innovate. And it's like, I slapped my forehead, and I was like, this is variation and selection. This would unleash progress in unimaginable ways. I'm still waiting for someone to explain to me what's wrong with this. And I immediately thought, this shouldn't be an obscure idea among econo-wonks and bloggers and Silicon Valley people. It needs to be a mainstream idea. So I petitioned the seasteaders that this needs to be a mainstream book that reaches the mainstream public and not described in technical language, but in evocative language. The more I thought about it, the more I learned about it, the more kind of I addicted I became to the idea. And that's when I started calling myself a sea evangelist.
So as you speak, you're talking about the ossification of government innovation since the American Constitution, essentially. Is seasteading a vote of no confidence in the American system?
I had no confidence in the American system before I discovered seasteading. And I can see that if you have a coercive monopoly where complex social problems are solved by saying, well, we'll just make a smaller group of people and give them more power and trust them to be saintly and smart and force everybody else to be good, that is a perfect incentive structure for people who mean well to impose their views on others, and endless expansion of that. There's always an incentive to expand your, if you're not threatened by competitors, if you can't be put out of business, and if your salary is based on confiscation, then there's just no reason for you to become more efficient, but there is a reason for you to expand your powers, expand your staff, write more rules, and let no rules go away. So every step that this state government takes, it takes away a little bit of people's freedom. And I feel like this is a cyclical process, that there's no way out of this, and there's just endless expansion. So how do we solve this problem? Like, to put it in basic terms, if you granted me a coercive monopoly over book writing, I would start out trying to write a really good book. But over time, I just sort of increase the fee of my book. Because, you know, you have to pay for it. And I would illegalize all other authors. And maybe I'd put out a book a week, and I'd require that everyone pay for it. And I would charge more and more money. It's just human nature that power is addictive, and I serve my family and friends better if I can just sort of coerce strangers. I would be corrupted by my power. I would turn into the Caligula of authorship. I'd be Quirkigula. I don't want to point fingers. It's like human nature exists. You give me absolute power, I'm going to serve my family and friends and my allies before I serve strangers. If you don't give me coercive power and the only way I can prosper is by trying to serve strangers, then I'm going to compete with other people to try to serve strangers as best I can. And if we can do this with governance, then if we can create a market of governance, we can create voluntary governance on the oceans.
So it's interesting. It sounds like you're treating seasteading the same way the market treats every other product or good or service that anybody might ever think about producing or providing. And the whole point of seasteading is to introduce that same level of competition to government. Is that a fair characterization?
I think it's a perfect characterization. And it's a funny thing if you say competition among cell phone carriers, people think, oh yeah, that's a good thing. If you say competition among governments, people immediately think, doesn't that mean war and killing and shooting? As a matter of fact, it does. It's exactly what it means among land-based monopolies. Their governments on land are founded on conquering military powers. On the ocean, they'd be founded by entrepreneurs. And if people can exit these nations whenever they want, then you're not going to have a coercive government. You're going to have voluntary governance that people choose.
How are you going to prevent a peaceful political establishment from mobilizing everyone's voluntary consent in a seastead and essentially creating the same type of ruling classes on the sea that you have on land?
Mobilize everyone's voluntary consent by persuasion. So if someone on a seastead provides a service so fantabulous that everyone volunteers their money to them to get that service, and then those people come incalculably, spectacularly wealthy. Is that what we're worried about? Because as long as there's no government that they could petition to write laws to protect them from other people serving even better, then those people may remain rich. They may even pass on their wealth to their offspring. But if those offspring then don't move that wealth into things of equal value that continue to grow, and other innovators come up with other services that are better than whatever that service is, that wealth will dissipate. And then new people will become the wealthy ones, winning by serving others better. In a market, concentrations of wealth are much more temporary than in a state. The states are permanently wealthy and powerful, and no matter how poorly they serve us, they're going to continue to get more wealthy and powerful because they don't experience market competition.
will the presence of successful seasteads and the innovations that they may produce actually come back in any way to the existing governments to force them to get better? I mean, presuming that there's not going to be a large percentage of any country's population that's leaving, is there anything that you would expect that would make the original land-based governments any better?
Yes. So imagine, like, the freest, let's say the most economically free seastead in the world, parked directly next to the most powerful, tyrannical, willing to punish its citizens empire in the world. And suppose this seastead starts prospering and creating tremendous amounts of wealth in the shadow of this great empire from which it cannot escape. What will happen? Will that great empire conquer that tiny little seastead? Or will the seastead compel the empire to change? Imagine if that seastead is called Hong Kong, and imagine if that great violent empire is called China. So Hong Kong was this defenseless little peninsula and island that through, you know, a strange historical trajectory was allowed to experience a large amount of economic freedom. Or let's just say it had a unique arrangement. And it created so much wealth in such a short amount of time that the great nation of China noticed and was embarrassed by the wealth that Hong Kong created and decided to experiment with little land seasteads like Shenzhen, like Hainan, which is its own little island. They opened up more and more of these, and suddenly poor farmers were migrating to these places in vast numbers. And the more they experimented with more open markets, the more wealth they created, and they said, hey, we can confiscate even more tax wealth. I give a large part of the credit to the end of communist China to the example set by the proto-seastead, the priesthood of Hong Kong. This is the most dramatic example. At least a half billion people in China have exited extreme poverty, in my opinion, because of the example set by Hong Kong. China's no picnic, and neither is Hong Kong. But we have numerous examples like this that are less dramatic. I would just cite, say, Estonia, which was one of the released from the Soviet Union. A small little innovative nation imposed the formerly unthinkable flat tax, grew at more than twice the rate of Western European nations, which spurred a debate among those nations that maybe they should try the flat tax. Last I calculated, something like 21 nations have imposed some sort of flat tax. States in the U.S. have flat tax. Most people don't even know that innovations in their government come from little examples set by little countries that can so outperform large countries that they change the policies of great nations. It actually happens over and over in history. Can you imagine if we had thousands of these on the sea, embarrassing nations into setting new policies, convincing politicians to rise to fame with a new governance innovation? And to take an extreme example, the United States set an example of, say, representative democracy that was unthinkable in the old world. And the old world completely changed because of the success of the United States. And these examples go on and on, and I can bore you with them. But yes, I think seasteads will change. I think the 45% of the Earth's surface upon which civilization will found voluntary societies will revolutionize the state-based societies we have on land.
Well, the option to have all of these innovations and various seasteading societies across the globe sounds like a lot more variety than we get in the typical elections cycle in America. It's very inspiring to think that if a President Trump or a President Clinton doesn't express one's core inner values, that there might be another option out there, another place to go.
Yeah, you don't have to vote for the lesser evil. Stop voting for evil and put that time into working towards founding your own city on the sea with your allies.
Thanks again, Joe. We look forward to the release of your book.
Thanks. That was an interesting conversation.
I'm Susanna Docupil, and this has been an episode of Seasteading Today. If you'd like to learn more about seasteading, please visit seasteading.org. Check out our Floating City project and let us know what you'd like to see on a floating city.